So I decided to stop for a minute to eat something. Those who know well Chicago, when you're going on the 294, there is a plaza right after O'Hare, those that you go under it. And then I stopped the car in there, went inside to grab something to eat. I went to the restroom. When I came back, the car was not there. And then I said, I thought immediately, how in the world? I lived for 20-some years in São Paulo, and I never lost my car in there. And then I moved to the U.S., and suddenly somebody takes the car. And it was my wife's car. So, and then I was so concerned, and I thought, what should I do? Should I call the police? And then I said, no, I'm going to call her first. So I called Nereida, and I was talking to her, baby, you're not going to believe it, but somebody took your car away. And then I turned to the building, and then when I saw, and somebody took McDonald's away as well. Because it's not there. When I came in, it was a Taco Bell, now it's a McDonald's, I told her. And then you know what happened, no?
Went
then
the wrong
I
side.
I came through one door, but I left through the other door. It's exactly the same thing on both sides. So I crossed the thing again, went to the place. There it was, yes. my wife's car. I was just wondering what the police officer would ask me.
Are you drunk?
And you know what happened that way to me, because I was distracted. I couldn't see. I was distracted. And so when you talk about this such an important topic to us, discipleship, sometimes we are not really seeing what's going around us and how important it is. So my goal here in these few minutes is just to share with you a little bit about a choice. I really like to connect discipleship with this word, choice. It is a decision that all of us we have to take. Discipleship here, of course, all of us know it started with an invitation. On the shores of Galilee, Jesus Christ came to two men, and then he invited them, come follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. It was a life-transforming journey, what Christ had in mind for those first disciples. Very intentional, the process, and he established the pattern for discipleship with that invitation. Follow me, just follow me. But of course, they had to decide to follow Jesus. But today's reality, in many places in the world, we simply kind of give to people a brief orientation, a kind of training. Of course, these are important. We go over doctrinal teachings, denomination beliefs, baptism, and all of these are important. But the question is, are they automatically assimilated in the body? Do they become real disciples? Well, if this were in fact the reality, the results would be kind of different from what we see today. Today we see names on church books. Depending where you're coming from, many names. All the areas of the world, not so many names in church books. Unfortunately, we see regular customers who they come to church looking for a religious product to consume. Very, very few committed, passionate followers of Jesus Christ. Because unfortunately, we see this in the church, the focus remains on personal choices. People are just trying to go around with their religious life around in their own choices. And it becomes a religious routine, and unfortunately we lose members when they go in that mode. And what is missing? And of course, when you see this membership, discipleship kind of tension, where should be our primary goal? Where should we put our effort? And of course, we need to understand that how can we as church be meaningful and relevant when we are developing discipleship processes in our churches? There are some questions here just for us to think about it. When a disciple is formed, it's before baptism. At baptism or after? Some of the important questions that we have to go over. I just want to, in 2 minutes here, go over something which I think is important for us, the historical discipleship journey, comparing two discipleship paradigms. The first one, and of course, throughout history, we have seen that lessons have been transmitted to the next generation through this process of mentorship, a discipleship process. We see the examples of Moses, Joshua, Elijah, Elisha, Paul, Timothy. I just have here a Bible text that I love it, when Paul says to Timothy, what you heard from me, keep as the pattern of sound teaching. Then he goes on, and the things which you have heard from me, and then he mentioned, entrust these to faithful men. So what you get, you pass on. So this has been the process. You see, we learn and then we pass on to others. When you go to the Greco-Roman culture, we are going to learn a little bit that the word mathetes was used by Greek philosophers before Jesus Christ. There was a process in which this learner, a trainee process, the pupil apprentice, the disciple, they were already teaching. But there is here something that I really would like to stress to you. Towards the end of the Hellenic era, this direct contact with the teacher was not a prerequisite in order for you to follow the teachings. In the beginning, as Socrates was mentoring Plato and Plato Herodotus, they were together. Their disciples kind of decided to live closer to the teacher. But towards the end of the Hellenic era, this personal contact was not necessary. It became just a transmission of information, just a cognitive experience, which we have today. You see, we go to school, you learn the contents without having the need to really follow the professor. That's exactly what happened in this moment. But when we compare this with the first century Jewish culture, the commitment to well-known teachers was in there. So the training was done in community, the Torah was the center of this learning process. We see, for instance, the example of Paul in Gamaliel. So the devotion to follow a teacher was not simply carrying on the teachings, but also to imitating his life. Was a very, very personal contact. So here in the Hebrew context, discipleship meant more than simply sharing cognitive information. So it was the sharing of a life, a commitment within the context of community, starting there, I just mentioned, with family and then to others. So it indicated not only the acceptance of the master's value, embracing the master's principles, but also reproducing in life his ideas and his beliefs in practical ways. I will come back to this in a few minutes. So I just want to compare those with you. Transforming discipleship, it is something that we need to strive for. The meaning of discipleship. For many, many years, I have struggled with this. I don't know how many of you have heard about my life experience, my ministry in the last years. In 2005, after I finished graduate school at Andrews, I accepted a call to go back to São Paulo, Brazil, to plant a church in the heart of the city, São Paulo downtown. It's a long story. I was there for a little over 10 years. It started with only 8 families, 16 people. And today, Nova Semente has an attendance of close to 1,400 people. It's a tremendous church and ministry that has developed throughout these years in São Paulo downtown. And during those 10 years, I knew I had this in my heart. I need to establish a discipleship process. Somehow, Lord, help me with this. So it was my desire, my dream. And during 10 years, I changed the discipleship process for that church 8 times, trying to find the best formula. How can we involve everyone with this? I just want to share with you some of the lessons I have learned. When you are talking about discipleship today, we need to have in mind that it is something broader than what it was in the past. I like this understanding of the integration of 3 things, 3 movements. The first one, which is the one we know well how to do it, which is classical discipleship, is basically having a teacher teaching stuff to others. We do this well. We have a full department kind of focused on this, which is Sabbath school. You see, we have the content and then we share every week around the world. Classical discipleship has some advantages and some problems too. So we can really train as many people as you can bring in a room. The problem is, how can I measure transformation? How can I measure? How can I be sure that what I'm saying or teaching, people are really getting in practicing in their lives? And classical discipleship is mainly focused on the Bible, of course. It's important. It has themes, but it can be a barrier in some aspects when we do not understand the next 2 aspects that I want to mention to you. The second one, biblical spirituality. I like to build, when I'm talking about discipleship, a list of elements. That without those elements, it's impossible to have the experience of discipleship. And one of them is communion with God. Without a deep, real, concrete relationship with God, we cannot live discipleship. And it comes from this biblical spirituality process that we need to have. And the third one, which is the hardest one to us, is relational discipleship. How important it is the environment in which discipleship happens. And I, just going back to my own story, and I remember in the beginning, I kind of created 5 modules of discipleship to my church. And I was training people, doing basically the classical discipleship kind of thing. And teaching the mentors and dividing the church in groups. It was awesome for 2 years. It worked for 2 years. I remember module number one was the mission and the values we had in our church. Two was biblical spirituality, the disciplines of spirituality that we have to develop in our lives. Module number three was around spiritual gifts, 4, mission, and 5th module was about community. But I noticed that in order for them to move on, they need to attend the classes we have created. And then I noticed that a bunch of people started module one, but as they were moving along, the group was reducing, smaller, 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 smaller. And in 2 years, in the end, we had more than 200 in the beginning. In the end, only 5 faithful finished the whole thing.
Wow.
That's when, Kleber, when I hit the wall. And I learned a lesson on discipleship. That very moment, because I thought, what am I going to do with them? They finished. Do I give them a diploma? Congratulations, now you are a disciple of Jesus Christ, you hang on the wall. What do I do with them? Then I learned one lesson I want to share with you, friends. Everything that has a beginning, a middle part, and an end is not discipleship. I learned this, took me 2 years. And I worked hard on this. I noticed, man, this does not work that way. We need to create something which is bigger, that's broader, that really involves everyone, and everyone, that they go together. So it was a hard lesson for us in this process. Christ, my friends, he has taught us that having faith means to follow. It's a decision, a choice that we have to make. That's the first test of faith. The basic presupposition of discipleship. I have to decide to follow him. And I basically, when I teach discipleship, I use 3 Bible verses, the main ones. I don't have time to go over the 3 of them, but I want to share with you this one, which has been a passion of my life, Luke 9:23. We know well, by heart, but this text has changed my life in the past few years. The invitation, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. What's the very first word? Actually, when you see before, in the text, says that Christ, he said this to all, to everyone.
Follow me.
The very first word is?
Follow.
In there? Yeah. If. Yeah. 2 letters. What is if in English?
Choice.
What is if in English?
Maybe yes, maybe
conditional,
conditional
particle. Same thing in Portuguese. 2 letters. C. It's a choice. What Christ basically is mentioning is, you're not forced to follow me. But if you decide, if you desire, and then he mentions 3 steps here. The first one, probably the greatest battle we have to face in our lives, is how to learn, how can we deny ourselves. It's going on the discipleship path is the opposite path of what Lucifer has decided to do in heaven. Instead of denying himself, no, he centered his life in his egocentric desires. A daily decision, and then the last part of the invitation, follow me. Why this text has really touched my life and my heart in the past 2 years is because I had a dream after working at Novo Semente for 10 years, which is, that's the way we need to go together in this. But how hard is to create a culture of discipleship? And because of that, we decided to start, just just jump here to here, sorry, here. We decided to establish a discipleship forum, which is called Follow Me, Siga Me in Portuguese. It started 5 years ago. So it was a small kind of event in the beginning. In 2014, we started Follow Me, trying to help church members and leaders of the church to understand not only the importance, but to live an experience that goes beyond few hours within a building once a week, which unfortunately has been the experience of many, many church members. So we need to understand that to follow Christ is way beyond that. It's a life-transforming journey with, of course, there are barriers in this process we need to learn how to overcome. So this was in 2014, the very first Siga Me, and then we've been doing this for 5 years. Last year was a tremendous blessing. We've been doing this, trying to invite people from all over South America to learn some of the lessons we have learned as community on how to develop a process in which a full congregation can go together in this choice, in this decision to follow Christ. And of course, there is a price to be paid for this. Does not happen overnight, does not happen without effort, without a communion decision to live our lives together and growing together in this process. Of course, we spent 2 days with the Siga Me Forum, sharing the experiences, sharing some of the lessons we have learned. I may, kind of, if I have a moment in the end to answer some questions, to share some of the lessons we have learned in this process. But it all goes around an intentional decision to live something that it's beyond ourselves. To close, I want to invite you to open your Bible with me, if you have it, or your device, to a last Bible verse. This is the one I have, the main one I have used when I'm talking about discipleship, which is John 13, 34 and 35. And we know well this, when Christ says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." Nothing was new here. The only difference is that Christ said, you have to love the way I have loved you. I have shown you how to do it. And then, verse 35, "By this all men will know that you are my what? My disciples." This is the way everyone will see that you follow me, if you love one another. That's why discipleship is not simply training, because we cannot force people to love. It's an experience that we need to learn in community. And that's one of the lessons we have learned in the Siga Me process. We need to learn how to love. It's a life-transforming journey that starts with this. There are many elements of discipleship, but this is the basic, the foundation, the most important. It's impossible, the experience of discipleship, without love. So it's a choice I mentioned to you, and I want to just mention, make sure that we learn how we can really change this paradigm. And then my conclusion is to you. Those two paths of discipleship, the first one more of a cognitive thing, and when you talk about the Jewish approach, we see this, the desire was to become like the master. It's a transformational process. So as church, and here's the problem. That's okay. In general terms, we still place too much emphasis on this Western Greek-based intellectual cognitive aspect of discipleship. It's just sharing content, sharing cognitive things. This is not wrong, but it's not enough. We need to learn that. We need to have a deeper understanding and practice. We need more than church members. We need real disciples who decide to come and follow the master. Thank you so much for attention. In the end, we can maybe talk a little bit more about this.
Very good.